I'm Janet Roper, and you're listening to the Reawaken Right Relationship Podcast. Welcome to this place where we have conversations about creating, nurturing, and sustaining right relationship with all sentient beings. Thank you for listening to this podcast and a hearty dose of gratitude to those who have supported this podcast by making a financial contribution. I delight in providing this on-the-house offering to you, and it is made possible for me to continue to do so thanks to the voluntary support from listeners such as yourself. To become a sustaining member or to make a one-time contribution, you will find the link in the episode notes. Thank you so much for your support. If you have been wondering how to come into right relationship with tools like boundaries, organization, and bullet journaling, or wanting to understand the difference between productivity and busyness, because believe me, folks, there is a big difference between productivity and busyness, you are in the right place at the right time. Today's guest, Brenda Schnabel, is a clinical psychotherapist, intuitive productivity consultant, lifelong creative, and a passionate animist living in Northeast Ohio with her supportive family. She divides her time between a clinical private practice, Sky Witness Healing Arts, and her newest venture, Soulful Focus, a space for fostering intuitively grounded and productive living. She is also a co-host of the podcast Everyday Animism and a proud participant and organizer for National Novel Writing Month since 2002. Welcome, Brandis. Well, thank you so much for being on this episode of Reawaken Right Relationship. I'm just delighted to talk with you, and I cannot wait to hear what you have to say about what right relationship means to you.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what I'm going to say either.
I love this honesty.
And thank you for having me. This is
you betcha.
I'm already having fun. So, yes, where do you want me to start?
What does right relationship mean to you? Because that can be kind of a fuzzy term in people's minds.
So I think that right relationship for me starts with work around knowing myself and really understanding myself so that I can then show up more externally in a responsible way. And that sort of permeates everything else that I do. I'm a psychotherapist in my local community. I'm also a consultant and an intuitive practitioner within a wider net. And I feel like that's part of the work I do as well, is finding whether people are in right relationship with themselves, which for me, I think a huge part of that is about boundaries. And within the context of boundaries, when I have my clinical hat on and I'm a therapist, there's a lot of talk about actual boundaries and relationships and, exploring where we've had boundary violations, where other people have not been in right relationship with us, where they've initiated that, the fracture in the relationship, exploring whether we're in right relationship with ourselves. Is there love in that relationship? Have we allowed ourselves to know ourselves, to truly know the people we care about? It's exploring those things in a deep personal way. And then in the less clinical side, where I get to have fun talking about things like productivity and organization and the more external areas of having right relationship, or the more external ways we have boundaries, I get to talk about the boundaries we have and the relationship we have with our time and our energy, professional versus personal, and all the different, pie pieces in the pie chart that is our life. Ideally within what right relationship, I don't think everything in our life needs to get, an equal focus or balance. Those are loaded things. But I think right relationship is where we look at that distribution on a personal level and we feel some peace around it. Like, if, you know, maybe we want it to be better, but we're at peace with why it's not better and that we're doing some things to make it better. Or maybe it is where we want it to be and it's stable and it's fine. And we're in right relationship in that way, where things are okay.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, right relationship to you is all encompassing. And it truly does have to do with relationships, starting with knowing ourselves and then expanding out from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the idea that we could ever be in right relationship with something outside of us, whether it's, our fellow humans, with our pets, with our environment, with our job, with nature, with whatever that higher power or, you know, bigger, you know, high self, you know, source, whatever you want to call that. How can we ever be in a right relationship with that if we don't understand who we are in the relationship? So I think it starts on a very personal and individual level.
So it's not as simplistic that we know ourselves because we are ourselves, but there are deeper levels that we need to dig into and to mm-hmm. not just assume that the superficial self that we are presenting to ourselves, mm-hmm. and then I think by extension to the world, mm-hmm. that is what's actually happening.
Right. And I think it's surprising. And then in some ways with the culture we live in, it's not surprising how many of us actually don't know ourselves. You know, the fact that we are us, you know, I'm me, that doesn't mean that I actually notice who I am in terms of my actions or how aware I am or how I show up in different areas of my life, how I show up for other people, how I show up for myself. You know, I'm recently navigating some complex realizations about my own body at almost 38. I'm coming to realizations about, you know, things that my body doesn't tolerate and all this new information where it's really sobering that I've been walking around in this body and not having certain information. So I think when we look at right relationship with ourselves, it's not just the what am I experiencing of myself right now, but where do I come from and what signals am I maybe skipping or ignoring? That where do I come from question is so loaded too, because what am I carrying that was really handed down to me by those before me?
So when we're talking at looking at right relationship with ourselves, it's not necessarily a bunch of warm fuzzies and you look at it and yay, everything is magically well. It's actually digging into your history, you know, historical perspective from when you were growing up, what, I'll use myself for example, what my aunts would tell me about my body and how that was just imprinted on my brain and it's carried mm-hmm. forth, you know, for let's just say decades, shall we?
Yes,
decades. And it's just, it's to me, it's learning a new me. And that can sometimes be wonderful and it can sometimes be chilling.
And it's always changing as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's always changing. And it's not just the lived experience that you've had that, and some of that gets put away and we don't really unpack it and we don't heal it and we don't honor it. Or other people have packed it away for us and we need to become empowered to unpack it and really feel and heal it. But also, I mean, there's so much science that supports this idea that we're carrying around the trauma of those before us. So there's so much to do that's even beyond like, who am I right now? But who have I been throughout my life? And who before me in my ancestral line handed me things to heal that they didn't heal? You know, what was handed forward to me that I'm maybe not aware of because it isn't, you know, it wasn't originally mine or it goes back further than just being mine from this lived experience of this current life in those traumas that we carry even in our cells and our DNA.
So go ahead, Brandis. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so that first step of knowing self, I don't think that part's ever finished. I think it's the constant refinement of a lifetime that constantly allows us to show up better and better and more consciously and more and with more grounding and with better boundaries throughout the course of our life. That's never a finished step. It's not step one. It's like all the steps. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I hear you on that. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Especially as you're talking about the ancestral work of bringing forth what has been in the past generations ago and has been carried down through the family line, and you're just accepting it as it's you because, you know, great grandma Susie said that's the way it was or whatever.
Right. I mean, just in the past 2 weeks, I've gathered new information about that lineage for me about, you know, things that I carry a long-standing, on a personal level, I carry a long-standing narrative of not being allowed to take up too much space or make too much noise or being the too much narrative. And I've always associated that with my own personal history of trauma or my own personal lived experience. And recently had the opportunity to speak with someone within my family who described just generations of that narrative of the women who were before me, not even just women, of that narrative being handed down way before I started to live my own manifestation of it. And so me knowing myself better and in engaging in that right relationship with myself, you know, part of it's been learning that, part of it's been identifying it. And then there's the work of putting it down, of saying like, this is not a narrative I need to carry. I'm allowed to take up space. I'm allowed to be all of me. I'm allowed to be, I'm allowed to make noise. I'm allowed. Yeah, I think so many women carry that narrative. I think that goes beyond my personal experience, my ancestral stuff that I carry, but also this cultural idea that I think there are so many people of marginalized statuses that carry that you shouldn't take up space. And so when you start with your own understanding of that and you begin to put down that narrative, that work of being in right relationship with yourself and knowing yourself better and better, it permeates in this healing way that allows you to take up space in a way that's visible, maybe to others in your family, maybe to others in your community, and in being a walking example of right relationship with yourself and your worth. Like, you have the capacity to have an expansive amount of healing that permeates beyond your personal experience and into this much broader net of needed healing.
Yes, yes. And I have to say, Brandis, that when you use the words too much, I just got truth bumps when you said that, because you articulated something that I had experienced and not articulated as a child. And that's one of the narratives that's carried forth in my history, is that you don't dance, you don't get up and dance, you just sit still. Mm-hmm. And so there's all kinds of things that are coming up in memory for me as you're talking. And it's a good thing, I think, because yeah. Now it's like the door is open and I can now put a direct, I think, correlation on, you know, being told as a kid, don't dance, don't move, don't do this, don't do that. And the hitch I've got in my giddy up today, you know, of being, oh my God, it's so stiff to move. I got to move this. Yeah. So it's interesting how that brings forth into our daily life. Now, listening to you talk also, it sounds quite frankly intimidating to, oh my gosh, we've got to do this on all the time and we've got to be on watch 24/7. But I mm-hmm. know you, and I know that you have, if you want to call them ideas, tips that you can share about how to take this a step at a time. Because you strike me as a very step at a time person. Instead of mm-hmm. looking at the whole enchilada.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's good to start with one lesson at a time there. So like for me, there are a million examples of that whole, you know, I don't just carry around the needed healing of like taking up space. Mm-hmm. There are a million other areas. Some of them I've already spent the time on them and they feel okay. And then there are areas that I haven't discovered yet. So it's okay to just be with the one you're in. But I would say in terms of like taking up space narrative, or being allowed to set boundaries. I mean, in dysfunctional families where you carry trauma from your own lived experience, we tend to internalize that, like, we're not allowed to set boundaries. We're not allowed to say no. You never, You have to have a relationship even with toxic family, because family is family. And, you know, there's all those narratives. Sometimes just taking a moment in each, I think it's okay to take a baby step there of looking at, you know, what is weighing on me right now. And for me, that's a good barometer too. It's just like, is this relationship right now, is it weighing on me? Like, does my body feel physically heavy? Do I feel a kick up in anxiety? Those to me are the immediate first steps. You know, is there a friendship you have where there are things you don't bring into that friendship, not because, you know, you're different from that person, but because you don't feel safe sharing parts of yourself with that person? Not like you like football, they like basketball, so you're not going to ramble about football for your entire, you know, coffee date with someone. But like the bigger stuff, like I won't share this part of myself with this person if the root of that is I don't trust them. Like, that's something to explore. And it usually ties into those bigger themes. You know, we don't chip at them by starting at the top at the big overarching issue. We start by looking around us and saying, like, you know, do I listen to my body? Do I allow my body to speak to me? What's that relationship like? Am I allowing my body and its discomfort to take up space? From a body positive perspective, am I allowing my body and its size to take up the space it takes? In our relationships, do I feel safe in this relationship? Do I also make the person in relationship with me feel safe by way of respecting their permission to take up space, to occupy space, to be valid as a part of the relationship? Because the flip side to my permission to take up space or to have boundaries is that everyone else has that permission as well. So am I taking up space in a way that respects the needed space of others? Am I existing without stepping on? And that can permeate into a million tangible things of, you know, looking at, you know, as a white woman, some of the work around that has been me speaking up in the ways that I should or I'm called to, but also not speaking over and not speaking out of my lane. You know, taking up space, but in right relationship with other people who also deserve that permission.
So it's a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, and how do you, oh, go ahead.
I think the work of that is just looking at the next moment and feeling, you know, really allowing ourselves to feel where there's discomfort, where there's anxiety, where there are adverse feelings. Those are really sacred teachers available to us. They have, you know, all those feelings have information. I just talked to someone yesterday about shame as a feeling that's there as this frantic companion living inside of you, trying to fix something that's not fixable. And some of the work of addressing that shame from an animistic perspective or right relationship kind of thing is about telling that shame, I appreciate the effort, but I'm allowed to feel uncomfortable, or, you know, this situation is okay. That just each of those moments where we have a feeling, that's a moment to maybe chip away at some of those bigger lessons.
Now, I have a question for you, and I'm going to speak for myself, that I was taught not to be aware of my feelings. As a matter of fact, I can remember when I first became aware of them. I mean, the only ones I could identify on this sheet of, like, I don't know how many feelings. It was like happy and angry. And that was the two perspectives that I have. So if someone else is in that paradigm of not realizing the whole spectrum of feelings are out there, how do they understand what their feelings are so that they can start to deal with that, to be aware of them?
I mean, some of that is as simple as, like you referenced having like a list of feelings. Just a couple weeks ago, I gave a client a list of feelings, and it was a mind-blowing experience. It was a really profound session because I hadn't realized initially in our dialogue that the reason there were never feeling words is because that person had not ever been given permission to verbalize feeling words and had just never identified what they were. And when I handed them a list, the next week was just sort of transformative in that they had this whole new vocabulary. So it's okay to, I think there are a ton of people who exist that way as well. So like there, you know, there's an endless list of potential feelings, and it's okay to just look some of them up. There are a ton of handouts online of like list example lists of feelings. And if you don't know what they feel like, odds are there's been a moment where you felt that way and weren't given permission. And so it was stuffed in a box. And sometimes just looking at a list is like opening up this locked box and kind of seeing what's inside that you were never allowed to play with.
Pandora's box.
It can be it can kind of be, I mean, it's not really Pandora's box because it's, you know, they're valid and deserved treasures. You know, mm-hmm. It's not something you should leave closed. It's something,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it's a box of like heirlooms, you know, hidden away in the corner of an attic where someone told you not to play. You find it, you open it and realize there's this whole other pile of words available to you. It can be as simple as just looking up emotions and spending some time really like maybe putting down your go-to words for how you're feeling and trying some of the other ones on.
You know, and I hark back to, I said it was a list of emotions and I misspoke. What it actually was a page of like smiley faces, emoticons, if you want to call them mm-hmm. that. And that yeah. made it so much easier because I could recognize the expression on that face that I had experienced, whether I'd put it on my face, expressed it outwards, or had just kept it internally. I could identify it by the look that was on that face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to start too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's safe to say that, you know, we're all together in working this and finding out more about ourselves, and we're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're not alone is where it's important to have those boundaries of like, it's great to always be working on you. And the other part of that is it's important to allow other people to always be working on them, and where we're always maintaining and exploring and refining our boundaries and respecting other people's is where we get to do those things in parallel with each other and at our own paces, but always respecting where we begin and end and where someone else begins and ends. So that we're all engaging in that growth in a way that doesn't stomp on someone, and on a greater scale end up oppressing someone. I think, you know, there's a spectrum of the negative effect you can have when you don't either respect your boundaries or someone else's. And boundaries are just that great. They can be tangible, they can be intangible, but they're just this fabulous guide to like, here's how far I can go into someone, a relationship with someone, and oh, there they are. And I can wave and we can kind of overlap a little, but always just protecting our own space and allowing people their space allows us this autonomy that can be really freeing. Boundaries, I think people think of boundaries as restriction, but they can be very freeing in that they create safe space in which we can become more vulnerable. And the more able we are to be vulnerable, the more resilient we are.
I think one of the first terms I ever heard you use about that was to stay on your side of the street.
Yeah.
And that really, it struck me because first of all, you have to know what your street is, where your street is, and which side is your side. And that goes back to the self-knowing, mm-hmm. becoming aware. So I love how the way this is all interconnected. You know, my favorite word is like a kaleidoscope. Everything is just, it's just so neat the way it all moves around. It works together.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And I wish that people could see the conversation that we're having now. We're doing this on Anchor, but I'm talking with my hands, you know, and I always talk with my hands, and it's like the kaleidoscope.
Me too.
And I'm moving. We should have done this on video, Brandis. because the kaleidoscope is just so beautiful in the way it moves, and I'm moving it with my hands and I'm seeing these different perspectives. And, you know, I say that kind of, in a joshing manner, but I think that's true. If we can take maybe not so serious, oh my God, I've got to do these boundaries. Oh, I've got, mm-hmm. you know, I don't even know what a boundary is. I don't even know what to start. Mm-hmm. Can you give an idea of what a first boundary might look like? A beginning boundary.
I mean, I think one of the simplest, but also sometimes the most important boundary to remember is that is the simple boundary of I come first.
That that's not true. Wait, hold the bus, Brandis. That's not true. Because again, going, and I'm saying this in jest too, which maybe I shouldn't, but here we go. Because in ancestry work, okay, when I look at my ancestors, it was the men first, then the kids, mm-hmm. and the women, if there was anything left over.
Well, fuck that.
I was wondering how long it'd take you to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, thoroughly, fuck that.
Absolutely, I think,
And even that narrative, like that patriarchal narrative of like men go first, uh-huh. like even that creates something toxic for men as well. You know, like there's a burden in having to always have the answers and always, always be in control and always be in charge. And like, you know, there's a huge pocket of feelings, emotions, experiences that men are robbed of by being a part of a patriarchal culture. I mean, there's the obvious stuff that we lose, that we experience, but it just doesn't really serve anybody. And the bottom line of like, you know, I come first. It means before you show up in terms of self-care, you know, self-tending, it means, you know, I need to have my basic needs met before I do anything for anyone else. And that doesn't matter who you are. I mean, if you're sick, if you're hungry, if you're exhausted, if you are not in a great mental space, you are in no shape to be meaningful and truly helpful to some other person. So there's that sacred need to tend yourself first. But also, you know, in that I come first, it's like, if you're in a relationship with someone and there's something you want of them, do you show up for the relationship with that yourself? Like there, you know, is my side of the street clean? Am I showing up with this integrity or with this idea of what a right relationship is? Am I showing up with those things from the get-go? Or am I withholding it in some way because the other person is? Am I waiting for them to take a first step? Or, you know, there's so many ways that like I come first is important. Speaking up about oppression, you know, like white women, we hold a lot of privilege and a lot of responsibility with that privilege to kind of show up in certain ways. So are you spending a lot of time yelling at everyone else to do better before you have actually begun to do better? That's been a big lesson for me in the past year or so is there a balance between my speaking up but actually showing up? Both for like better knowledge, for actually being of help, of service, service to your community. You know, do you complain about other people not being of service in your community while you are not actually doing much for your community? You know, do you complain about a spouse or a friend or a loved one not giving you something that you have not actually begun to give yourself? So there's that self-care element, but also in a right relationship, like, why are you going to ask people for stuff you're not giving? And if you're in a relationship where you don't feel that you have those things to give the other person, that's a relationship to really look at. Is it a relationship? Is it in right relationship? Do you even want to have the relationship? And sometimes I come first is I'm going to set a boundary and end the relationship before it goes any further into unhealthy or toxic territory or continues down that road. So I think an initial, very simple, you know, simple isn't the same as easy. So there are really simple things that are really, really impactful to sit with and, you know, let it begin with me or it starts with me or I come first are really big but very basic places to start with good boundaries and with right relationship.
And in the sense with which you are speaking of that, it is not selfish at all. It is self-care.
Mm-mm. Self-care is never, I mean, selfish is a loaded word. Mm-hmm. I mean, selfish, it's absolutely imperative that we engage in selfishness that serves us in a way that we're able to then serve others. And having a long history of working with caregivers and I used to work in geriatrics. When I worked at a hospital, I worked in geriatric psych, and I was very passionate about working with the caregivers, kids and adult children who had their own children, but were also trying to make sure their parents were well cared for. And there was constantly this dialogue of, you are not showing up for any of these other people until you are tended. You're not doing your best by anybody else if you're exhausted, if you haven't had time to yourself, if you've not asked for help, if you're shouldering more than your share of the burden by any standard. And it's true for everyone, because we're all caregivers of something, even if it's of ourselves.
Now, I know that you are a proponent of bullet journaling and planning and organization. And yeah, just the, that just brings a song to your heart when you think of those things. How can those tools be useful in becoming aware of what our boundaries are, what our commitment is to ourselves?
Right. So those are tangible tools for the boundaries we have with our energy and our time, and the boundaries we have with what we want and what we can actually accomplish too. Right. So I love a physical planner. So this is like where I nerd out over the, the practical boundaries.
Nerd away.
Yes. So, Soulful Focus is my business that's based around the productivity stuff, a deeply intuitive and grounded productivity and organization. And one of the ways that I find that to be, one of the things I find to be useful with that is, bullet journaling or paper planning of some sort, which is just a tangible way. When I teach I've taught, basic 101 bullet journaling for free at like local libraries here. And one of the things I always talk about at the end is why. And there's so much research that when we write things down, it helps anchor it in our brains. There's also so much research that supports the fact that our brains don't actually multitask. When you're forcing the act of what we perceive to be multitasking, you're actually having your brain rapidly switch between things in a way that's not good for our cognitive health. Storing lists in your head is not good for your cognitive health. And as someone who's worked in the field of, geriatric mental health, like I'm always looking at ways that I can minimize my risk factors. And the better I take care of my brain, in my 30s, I'm hoping the better chances I have of maintaining that cognitive health, longer in my life. So it's helpful to get things down. I find it therapeutic. I use the bullet journaling format because it helps in terms of productivity, but it also provides me with a place to place intentional gratitude, to longhand journal when I want to visualize a project by sketching it out. I always have it with me. And frankly, it's really helpful when I go out to dinner with my daughter, because she has a place when, the placemat with the crayon, she runs out of space within 5 minutes. I give her pages in my bullet journal. And then those are these lovely memories where I date them and put her age. And I have these little scribbles in the midst.
One of the things that has amazed me is how flexible you are when it comes to helping people find the style of journaling, bullet journaling or planning that works for them. Because we're in a couple of groups together, and I've been amazed that somebody will say, oh, well, this isn't working because I need something to put on the refrigerator. I need something that's bigger that I can see. And you'll say, well, try this, try that, go there. And you've done that with me. In the sense, starting off with just, writing down a little bullet journal, getting into the Panda Planner and, looking at different aspects. And I remember one time I found this beautiful, I thought I was going to switch to it, this beautiful journal, because it was very dragon-like and very colorful. And I'm showing it to you, virtually. I'm going, look what I found, yay! And I'm saving money, yay! And you said, but Janet, think, the pens that you love to use, okay, the fountain pens, they're going to bleed through that. And I just went, oh, damn, yes, they are.
So, yeah, I think it's important to find those allies. And it's funny because I was just double checking this because I was talking about it the other day, and I was just looking at my website too. I talk about systems, tools, and helpers as allies. All of those are allies. In terms of, you know, systems, tools, and helpers, I mean, this is where it's important to know yourself first. Mm-hmm. And what works for you may not work for me. What works for me doesn't work for everyone else. But I'm also an experimenter. I'm on the Myers-Briggs, I'm an INFJ. So I'm that person who's very willing to explore, but also likes to actually dig into different things. So I don't just explore the options, I try them, which is a unique mix. So if you're looking to use something, and I'm a tech nerd, so if you're looking to use something in terms of technology or social media stuff, websites, platforms, I'm also a nerd about paper pens, planners. If you're looking to try some of those things, I've likely tried it myself. And it was so fun to develop an entire business around, hey, like, I love to experiment. I'm going to share some of that so that it's useful to others. And I've also become very, very rooted. That was actually my word last year.
Yeah.
I was just realizing today, that's actually what I spent a lot of last year doing, was really getting rooted in what works for me, but also what tends to work for different types of people. It's been really fun to explore some of those things that help us in establishing our boundaries with our time and our energy.
Because as I understand what you're saying, when you're talking about one of those tools becoming an ally, then that brings us into right relationship with that ally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, are you ever going to be in a right, because a right relationship should also feel like a well-grounded relationship where, you know, both parts or all parts of that relationship are well served. So say you get a planner that this is a really tangible or, you know, planner nerd example, but, you know, say I will sometimes try out a planner. Like a recent one that I've tried to find a planner with full daily pages for every day in it that I like. And what I've ultimately come to the conclusion about is that I don't want to have to fill out an entire page for every day of my life. And so, say you get a planner that's a daily planner. There are a lot of pages that you really like, but there are a lot of pages that go blank. You end up feeling resentful or guilty about all that blank space in your planner, or the fact that you started it in February and you wasted all the January pages, or you went on vacation in July and you put it down. Now you have 3 weeks of blank pages and the pressure of, like, you know, all of that. So the planner gets neglected. If you want to talk about, you know, from an animistic perspective, like, who's being served in that relationship? This planner is great, but not for you. So it's just getting tossed aside and ignored and neglected and ultimately probably like thrown away or thrown in a box, unfulfilled and incomplete. And you end up not fulfilled, not feeling completely supported with a tool that you chose that ultimately didn't really align with your routine and your schedule and how you work. Like for me, that's a different set of parameters for the kind of planners that I like. So one reason I try to stick to undated planners, because I like the ability to put them down, but they're still available to use later if I want to pick them back up.
Right. Right. Now, this can sound, quite frankly, to me, as an Aquarius and a Hufflepuff and ENFP and all that good stuff, 7 mm-hmm. on the Enneagram, this can sound like a lot of busy work, a lot of busyness. How do I take that and change it from busyness to productivity?
So, yeah, that's one of the things that I talk about a lot. Through Soulful Focus and even in terms of clinical sessions, that busy is not the same as productive, and busy is not a badge that we get to wear that means anything good about us. The fact that if you're scrambling and running around through your life and you're like, oh gosh, I gotta go, I'm so busy. If your answer to how are you doing almost always has the phrase, it's been so busy, or I've been so busy, or things are really busy. you are not in right relationship with your time and energy and likely a lot of the relationships in your life, because we should not feel that way. It's okay for that feeling to exist, but that feeling is a teacher. It's saying there's something you've not put down. There's something in the case of, you know, you're saying like with a planner or finding these things, like when I feel busy in a way that has to do with my productivity, I'm usually engaging in what I like to call productivity masturbation, which is dicking around looking for the perfect tool. And sometimes the perfect tool is just the one in front of you that's the least complicated. This is why I love bullet journaling, because ultimately, like, I can always pick up a blank notebook and just start writing and I'm good to go. When I start getting into this place of I'm playing around with different options and I'm not actually getting things done, I call that like the productivity masturbation, because you're mostly trying to just feel productive, but you're not actually doing anything. So ultimately for me, when it comes to like, you feel like it's too much, everything's complicated, that's always a time to pick up a blank notebook, get in touch with some basic system. I love bullet journaling because it really allows you to do whatever you want and just get stuff on a page in the smallest bite possible. That's the other thing, is goals and projects, like, they like to be done in small steps, really, really small steps. The smaller the step is, the more you get to write down and check off. And I don't know that this is true for everyone, but for me, even sometimes writing something down that I've already done and checking it off makes me feel more accomplished in having done it.
I hear you on that. Brandis, you are just a wealth of information. What would be the three things that you would like to leave our listening audience?
Oh gosh, we wandered all over the place.
I know.
It's kind of tough.
I know. Wandering is fun.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is a ton of fun. So, I mean, we talked about right relationship in terms of really starts with knowing yourself. I think it's really important to know yourself. There's a lot of ways to explore that on your own. It's also a great thing to do with a therapist. In terms of right relationship with the world, I think it's important to make sure that you know your lane, you know what your side of the street is, and know your role, and know as much as you can before you speak. In terms of right relationship with your time and your energy, finding the right tools, systems, tools, helpers, finding the right tangible, practical allies is crucial. And the act of finding them is not the productivity part. The part of simply diving in and taking small first steps is the part where we're acting in right relationship with our path and our time and energy. And just remembering that, you know, there's so many pieces to that pie, that it all needs tended. Not in equal amounts, but everything should be getting some attention.
And I know that you have some online groups too, that people, would they be welcome to join that? Can you tell us something about that?
Yes. So when it comes to, you know, my practice is local, but Soulful Focus is, you know, it's online. So I'm working on some consulting packages. Those are upcoming. I do some mini readings. I love to do intuitively led affirmations. Mm-hmm. I have that as an offering right now. People can join me on Habitica, which is a really fun productivity tool for nerds who like to create like a gamified approach to getting things done. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook. And I love doing, this week has been really great for me because I've gotten back into doing work sprints, which is basically virtual co-working. The idea that you're sharing space, and sharing that space provides some accountability for actually working. There's information on my website, soulfulfocus.com, but it's basically we're hopping on Zoom. Everybody can see each other. And I do Pomodoro style work sessions where we do 20 minutes of work. You choose what you're working on. I've had people do things from the dishes to, you know, I caught up on client sessions. the last two I did today, I was filling out a medical form that I'd been avoiding for a week. And so you do 20 minutes of work. We do 5-minute breaks where we sit and chat. We grab snacks. Every few, we get a 15-minute break. And then we kind of talk. What are you working on? How's everybody doing? It creates an environment where you can get really concentrated work done, and you are also getting intentional breaks, which is really important. It's that balance of, you know, working with intention, but also resting with intention. And I can tend to sit down for 3 hours and then not really know what I got done, because I never stopped or paused or like got a drink and hadn't been to the bathroom. And this creates that structure and accountability of other people sitting there with you doing it. So that's something I do a lot of online too. It's free. It's fun.
And that's at soulfulfocus.com.
Yep. All of those things.
And we'll have that in the episode notes too. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise, your wisdom, your right relationship with the world as you experience it, and just, you know, the essence of what Brandis is. Thank you for bringing that into the show today.
Thank you for having me. This was really, really fun.
You betcha. I'll be talking to you later, okay?
Sounds good.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you love what you're hearing on this podcast? I sure hope so. And if you are loving it, I ask that you show support by liking it and leaving a comment or review on whatever platform you are listening to this on. You can also show your support by sharing it with your friends and family. And I so appreciate your help. Thank you. I bet you have heard all about the importance of setting an intention, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I bet a lot of you do that on a fairly regular basis. But you know what? There is more to it than just setting the intention and then waiting for it to happen. Join me on next week's episode as we will be talking about the importance of setting an intention, what's behind it, and noticing the impact your intention has on others. I think you'll enjoy the podcast, Everyday Animism, that I co-host with two exceptional women, Kelly Harrow of SoulfulIntentArts.com and Brenda Schnabel of SoulfulFocus.com. In this podcast, we explore all things animism, particularly how animism impacts everyday life. You can find it here at Anchor or on your favorite podcast platform. The 20 plus years that I have spent writing, speaking, podcasting, and sharing what I know with you have all been to support your life and relationship with the animals and the other nature beings you love so dearly. I share what I know and intuit freely, a gift from my heart and spirit to you and the sentient beings of the world. It's a body of work grounded in love and infinite respect for all life, because we all do better when all creatures do better. If you find my work helpful, if an article or a podcast has inspired or informed you or expanded possibilities in your world, a donation would be deeply appreciated as a way to show your support. You can make a payment of any amount at paypal.me/Janet Roper, or simply go to my website, www.janetroper.com, and at the top you will see a tab that says Make a Contribution, and you can make your contribution there. I thank you very much. Your contribution makes my work sustainable. Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you have enjoyed hearing this, remember to subscribe to the podcast on Anchor or iTunes. And if you would like to follow more of my work, please visit www.janetroper.com.